Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about some herbicide options for 2026. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at tractor sales being on the decline. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about Poor Richard's Almanac. In our Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey, guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Feel like we say this a lot, but Mother Nature, go home, you're drunk. We went from like 40 degrees and rain and snow melt to freezing and blowing snow.
Windy.
Very windy. Like, I don't know. And next week, it looks like it's kind of more of the same. It's going to float in the 30s, and then we're going to hit 40 again. So a couple chances of snow and then rain again. Like, I don't know what to expect. I don't want the snow to all go away, but I also would rather have snow than the icy, crappy, like this morning taking my kids to school was a little bit dicey in spots.
It's nice when you get the snow, you do all the work to move it, it's where you want it, and then it melts.
That is nice.
It's nice to have it once it's
right,
there.
Right.
It's like, now it's melted, you did all this work. I'm sure the farmers, you know, that's a lot out of their day, plowing snow, just putzing around.
Well, then you've got those piles just seeping everywhere when
right.
We get the thaw. And
just be nice if it came and stayed. Just
especially till Christmas is usually nice, at least. Or like you say, if we're going to get it, then I'd rather it stay and then just all slowly melt. Especially the whole Midwest, there's areas that got way more snow than we got so far, and all of their snow is gone. You know, you go down in Iowa where they got some sort of blizzard, and now that whole, they got more rain than we got. So
sure,
it's just a mess then when you're dealing with that.
Well, the trails must have been open south of the Fox Valley, the snowmobile trails, because I went to Madison on Tuesday to get my daughter from college, and there were, like around Beaver Dam, there were snowmobiles on trails, and they looked fair.
Yeah, I think part of Winnebago County opened last weekend.
The really cold weekend, yes. Those looked pretty rough by Monday when I drove by them. But even up like north up here, a lot of them got groomed, and then it just wasn't enough snow to open, or they've got different rules with deer hunting and muzzle loader season and the state insurance that I've heard.
Is that what
supposedly
just a bunch of different things.
From what I've heard, it's not actually so much the deer hunting. It's more like they just have to get permission from all the landowners where it crosses to make sure they're okay with you going through. And so it's not just the deer hunting part. It's the landowners, like, they don't want to piss off the people who might be hunting on the property if the snowmobile trail goes through, allegedly.
I've heard that rumor from the same source, so who knows, but
very possible.
The same rumor that to open them up in Winnebago County, they basically had to call all the landowners and get permission, which would seem like a lot of things to do, but I could see is, and if like one landowner says no, are you just going around that?
Detour.
Right.
Yeah.
Apparently they were able to get permission to open them all. So
yeah. But not, it sounded like not every zone was
true,
open.
Right.
Certain ones.
Certain zones, yeah.
We're probably both going to hear it now from said source.
From, yes. Well, and from the,
because I used the term allegedly.
All these snowmobile clubs that,
does that said source not like you use the word allegedly?
I don't know. Said source may or may not. Said source likes to give me a hard time regardless. So,
well, keep doing it, said source.
it's funny now, too, because as I was at the WASH conference, the Wisconsin Water and Soil Health Conference earlier this week, and it's, as we were talking about the potential thaw that was coming, that, you know, that we got yesterday and the last couple days, we were discussing it in many groups, and you could always pick out the people who are like diehard snowmobilers who are like, shut up, it's the first time in December we've been able to open the snowmobile trails in like forever. I don't want it to thaw. Like, well, yeah, I don't want to thaw for hay fields and wheat fields and everything else too, but doesn't mean it's not going to happen.
Can't fix it.
Can't stop the weather. Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. I like that.
Someday. Yeah, and I know I'm not looking forward to this weekend's Packer Bear game as much as I was a week ago.
It does feel. Watching our whole
no
team
Micah Parsons.
Get hurt is hard, yes.
Probably no Christian Watson, but maybe. No
Zach Tom. Probably Evan Williams.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the injury bug has been riding the Packers for a while now, but seems to have gotten progressively worse in a game, what was a relatively close game with Denver up until Parsons went down.
Well, especially up until when Watson got hurt, it was
literally
he got the wind knocked out of him, and it was like the wind got knocked out of our Packers. Like, they just looked defeated, and yeah, and then when Parsons got hurt, that was rough to watch. Those are like non-contact, and immediately I looked up what the surface that they play on was a turf, grass.
Yeah.
And because I was immediately going to be, you know, blame it on that. Well, it's as natural of grass as you're going to, it's Kentucky blue.
Oh, okay.
It's like the most, they just redid the field apparently like less than a year ago with brand new grass. And
so we'll blame the altitude.
Well, you're right. So exactly. So we can't blame the surface they're playing on either. But the
no game should be played 1 mile or more above sea level.
There are surfaces we can blame stuff on.
Yes.
Josh Jacobs is still fighting his knee injury from MetLife's terrible turf, but you always hope that it's like, oh, maybe he didn't blow his knee out, but then it's like, yeah, he did, like the next day when the news comes and they confirm it. It's sad.
Yeah. I am hearing the people describing Packer fans or Green Bay as entitled town instead of the title town, because basically saying there's a bunch of people look into like how hurt are we more hurt than others, and basically they found out no, we don't get hurt more often than other teams. Like it's
everybody's
the same, and you know, stop whining just because you're, you know, brand new player that you just got hurt doesn't mean that
you crashed your new toy.
I was going to say, it doesn't mean pretty sure anybody who crashes their new car gets pissed.
Yeah, right. They get pissed. Nobody else really gives a shit. And that's what nobody else cares.
Nobody else ever cares about your injuries in terms of fandom. They're happy to see your top prospects go down.
That will make when we potentially beat the Bears, it'll feel that much better, I guess, if that happens. But
if we can do it regardless of...
But the Bears have a couple receivers out, too.
Yeah.
They aren't. And Nunze and a couple others aren't playing, so they got some, too. They keep Williams in the pocket. If he can run and he can throw on the run, that's about all he does well. If you keep him in the pocket, he can't hit a receiver. So let's try to keep him. And they gotta, if they don't stop the run, they're not winning. Doesn't matter what Williams does. If they don't stop the run, they're not winning. And if Love plays hero ball again, like just tries to... Even the last drive of that Denver game, they had a chance to tie.
Right, that was...
And they went... When they went from fourth, like all four of those plays were like they were trying to get 20 yards. And it's like, let's just like Tom Brady it down to like get five.
Get 10, four. Yeah.
You know, they were trying... Like he... All four of those passes on that last drive were incomplete. Well, it's like, stop playing hero ball. Just
especially when your best wide receiver at going deep is hurt.
Yeah. Right.
You like that option isn't quite as good.
The whole field. I mean, yeah, it's nice. Like, sure, try that on first down to wear out the defenders a little bit and then work the whole field.
Get some yards.
But, yeah, don't keep shooting down the field constantly.
Well, they're still in it.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe they'll surprise me. You never know. All right, you guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Yeah.
So, Todd, what are some newer herbicide combos for 2026 that we got?
So just like the Packers were scheming, you know, they got Micah Parsons right before the season, got a brand new player, new thing to try to figure out, and now they got to go back to their game plan from before. Today we're going to talk about new herbicides and maybe how you could fit them into your rotation, but I would start with the caveat of there's not a lot of new things coming. There's technically no sort of real modes of action for 2026. There's some products with new active ingredients and some new premixes. But what I would start out by saying is we still got to make sure that we protect the current herbicides we have, because really, in general, there's not many new modes of action coming. So that's one thing to think about as these work, is a lot of new premixes, and then, like I said, a few of the new active ingredients. But some of these you could have already made before, and now they just come in one jug, which is convenient and nice. But we're not talking that, and that's been our lifetime as agronomists. I mean, we've trying to protect and use the current products. And what I would say with this group of class is it feels like a bit of a down year comparing to past years for what's coming out new. And then I think next year is going to be a real big year, because we have Viconic soybeans coming out, where we've got some new soybeans that can get sprayed with more different herbicides than what we've been used to now in the recent past, where we've had sort of Enlist and Liberty and Dicamba in beans, and then so Enlist and Liberty.
Viconic will be a five-way, right?
Right. So I think that class might be, we'll see some things that pair up with that.
Mm-hmm.
So not saying this is, some of these two on a down year like this, you can still have one or two that just end up being, that end up shining in their own way. And I think there is a couple in here that do that have some unique properties that will really help us. So let's get into the list. The first one, a new group 12 from Bayer called Convintro. And it's made with the active ingredient difluflenican. Matt, I might need you to call. I'm going to have to, like those commercials that I hate where they call in the backup quarterback to open a garage door or back in a trailer. Matt, I may need to call in my backup. No, I'm not may. I need to call you in as the backup quarterback for most of these to properly pronounce the...
The word difluflenican.
Yeah. So this one's not necessarily new, but it is new to North America market and our cropping system. So it's new to us, which is, then it's new. And basically it's a bleaching action on weeds, but it can cause some crop injury. So you'd have some white leaves and stems. And basically, initially it's going to be for like corn and beans, and it's going to be targeting water hemp and Palmer amaranth, which that's what is good about this class, is it is fairly specific to the problem weeds we do have and are facing. So I would say that thankfully the people making these chemistries are seeing, okay, here's where the problems are, how do we go after these weeds, and maybe in the future we'll actually see our weed shifts again, that, you know, back to some other weed problem instead of water hemp and Palmer. But for now, we do have a lot of cavalry coming to help that. So that's...
So you're saying we're going to be talking about velvet leaf a lot?
I don't know. Back to lamb's quarter.
Ugh.
That was 80s and 90s. Farmers were pissed off at velvet leaf.
So Convintro is new to us, but not new to chemistry. So then what else we got there?
Yeah, the next one up is Zidua Plus 3.6 SC. So we know Zidua Pro, we know Zidua SC.
So is this a streaming service?
It does.
Zidua Plus?
Yes.
You can watch your weeds die in real time.
But Zidua's like jumped on a bunch of different, the Kyber Pro, you know, there's a bunch of other stuff that's got Zidua in it.
Right.
So, let's have Zidua grab something else instead of someone.
And really, this technically is Zidua Pro minus the Sharpen.
Plus Pursuit.
I'm going to double check, but Zidua Pro has Sharp. What's that? Isn't Pursuit? It Pursuit? And then, well, so while we look that up, it's going to open up sort of application flexibility. So Zidua Pro is only pre, and Zidua C is post, but this is adding the Pursuit to that, and this can be applied up to V6 soybeans, which is actually quite a lot. Most of these products are up to V5. Like, rarely do you see one sort of go to V6 soybeans, which is basically, you know, almost to first flower and anything. And then it's a very low use rate, which is nice.
You're correct, Todd.
6 ounces. Yeah, so Zidua Pro is Pursuit, Zidua, Sharpen.
Yep.
And basically we're going Zidua Pro, slightly better Zidua Plus. You're just pulling out that Sharpen, which gives us our label to go early post with it. So, which is nice. I the more we can have some flexibility in products. I personally, for some of my soybean growers, really like not putting a pre on, but doing a very early post. I've had quite good luck with that, especially the guys that have somebody else spray, and they can't have everything planted, and it would be like 4 or 5 trips with the sprayer, or the guys that want to spray their corn and don't want to clean out in between and do beans, the early post can work, and here's another product that fits that.
Well, we've had some trouble with spraying pre, and we don't get the rains we were hoping for, and we blow through anyway.
Right.
So it gives us and also cooler weather at planting because we're planting beans earlier. So we have that cooler weather that maybe those weeds aren't going to germinate as quickly. So if we wait a week or two after planting and do it early post, we've also gave us more active ingredient in the back end. We push that out into the season further as well.
Right.
Now, is that one for sure, or is it still waiting?
Yeah, so that one is kind of, some of these are still technically awaiting federal registration. So this one is still waiting. It's a BASF product.
You would think it's Zidua Pro, and you take something out, that it would be easy.
Correct. And
to get through.
Pursuit has been around. I mean, Pursuit's been around for a long time. I used a lot of Pursuit back in the day in Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
That was Pursuit Roundup.
Yep.
And it worked good when it worked. And this would be almost like the new age of that. You're not going to kill any emerged water hemp or anything like that, but it would.
Late 90s, early 2000s, we were doing Raptor Pursuit.
Right.
Like just, we were using those herbicides on post, post emergent. We weren't really doing pre-emergent on soybeans.
So Matt makes a good point here that they would think the registration wouldn't be.
Should be more of a formality than anything.
Yeah.
But you never know.
Next one is brand new, and here's another one that this was distributed in a different market and is brought to North America, but it's called Rapidicil 0.46 EC.
Got to get that 0.46.
0.46, yep.
Yep.
Is that the rate, 0.46?
Some of these are interesting of like that they're adding that now into a lot of the, so we kind of know the, how much product is in there right in the trade name, which isn't a bad thing because then you know if it's a little different. But this is a new group 14 from Valent. Matt, I'm going to call in the assist on this.
Epirfenicil?
Yes, there you go. Sounds like, this one really sounds like some sort of medicine that you'd hear a commercial for. Yes. Like
side effects.
Side effects may include
death,
diarrhea, vomiting, uncontrollable weeping.
This one's an experimental PPO and has activity on annual broadleaves and grasses, certain grasses. It is weak on a few of broadleaves like mare's tail, but it's very fast acting. So never saw this in person, but we did see some. I believe Rodrigo Worley had some studies with this.
Yeah, he was working on this one in
like a burn down situation, yeah. And it was from like a cover crop burn down situation. This throwing in with Roundup looked like it really worked well. Looked like it was very helpful to the round. You know, almost like what Cadet used to do, mm-hmm. in a way. But this still is more of kind of herbicidal properties too. But just you'll see some symptoms show in, you know, within 3 days, it says. But yeah, it's very fast acting. So which makes it Roundup at times can be very slow acting. This one would be something to throw in to kind of make it.
Yeah, how many times with Roundup do farmers say, did it even work? It's like, just be patient.
Just wait a week.
Yeah.
So if you got fungus, then add some tough-acting tenactin with your rapidicil. I'm assuming that's behind the name, is the rapid way it works.
Right.
Rapidicil.
Oh, and the sil in the chem name ends with the sil, so you probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to have John Madden in my head all day, Matt.
Tough-acting tenactin, boom. So do we need a telestrator?
Yeah.
See this water hip over here, dead.
It's rad, it's rapid.
This mare's tail, he's still hanging around, but this water hip, dead. See, what you got to do is you got to get actual contact of the herbicide on the weed in order for it to die. It's the best mannedism I can think of for
that's sorry, pretty sorry, you do Chris Farley better.
I do. I don't do a good.
Actually, your Madden sounded a little Chris Farley-ish. I liked it.
No, I don't do a good Madden. I can't quite get that. Frank Caliendo does one of the best Maddens. Shout out to a guy from him.
Was
he originally from Wisconsin or just went to school in Wisconsin? Yeah, he's from Wisconsin. I think he lives in Chicago, but yeah. Well, we won't hold
Can you add this name in? So Valent has acquired the rights from
Sumitomo.
Yeah, so I think that's a cool name too. That
I just picture a large Japanese man rolling around over the top of the weeds. Sumitomo.
So it could be sold under a different trade name. We don't know yet how that's going to go. And this one also is still awaiting EPA approval and will be launched fall of 2026. So So some of these, again, back to my Market Parsons thing, we thought we'd be able to use and have in the playoffs, but
now we can't.
They will not potentially be able for you to use them. So
Matt, Waukesha South High School.
Okay. I was going to guess West Dallas. So.
Yeah, I thought it was down in that southern, yeah. You can spray a PPO.
He was born in Chicago, but...
Okay, I knew there was some connection to Chicago.
And he went to UW-Milwaukee.
Huh?
Interesting.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Imagine him at college. Like
probably the same as Farley.
Yeah, it would have been wild.
Yeah, I'm sure he was a very popular guy at parties.
Yeah.
Probably did impressions of the professors.
The next one, you're really going to need help, Todd.
Ooh, yeah, that one looks pretty tough.
Yep, this one I got set up to help. Liberty, liberty, liberty,
liberty. Ultra.
We're going to get sued.
So this next one, sort of, this one too I thought was odd because I thought it was technically already out. So I'm not sure why we're kind of...
There was some out
last year. Yeah, so it has EPA approval, is being marketed, but maybe part of it was really just a red shirt freshman last year in a way. We used a little, but still kept its...
That's a very good...
And it was
still kept its...
The first to go through the ESA like labeling process too. That was one reason it was talked about so much.
This one, I got that in my notes, Matt. When using this product, ESA drift and runoff mitigation guidelines must be followed. So that could also be true for some of these other ones as they come out, that these are that first class of ones that we're going to have to do something different potentially as far as mitigation practices and guidelines go. So basically kind of the use rate, and this too... What I would say that I'm hearing different this winter about this product is the use rate kind of is, they're saying 24 ounces will be equal to the 32 ounces of the old Liberty or the generic formulations, but also the use rate used to be, I believe, 24 to 29 ounces, and now it's like 24 to 32 or something. Like, it actually went up a little bit that you could still, if you really, really need a lot of burn down, the you can go higher.
If you need a lot. And then the same rules apply in Liberty, right? The 3 pounds AMS, spray, middle of the day. Like, none of this has changed.
It's a little bit of a princess when it comes to spraying.
I would really be great if you sprayed between 10 and 2. But I really
like that better. More people say, like, it's banker hours and like that. Yeah. I like princess better. Yeah. That is nice.
Princess weather.
Riverside princess.
This one you need. Like,
beach weather? Like,
but maybe, like, this one, she'll treat you good if you treat her good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, I mean, I
get your gallons up, like,
take her downtown.
All the things you did with your old girlfriend Liberty, do again.
Yes.
And yes.
Don't shun her. Make sure you give her the attention she needs.
So for soybeans, basically same timings that from emergence to early bloom or R1 stage. And for corn, it's emergence to R6 corn. And like Bill said, include AMS. You might need a defoamer. Watch your droplet size. You know, it's a...
pressure, gallons.
Yeah. All this stuff, at least with this, I feel like we used to not know how to treat this princess right. And we were kind of... we thought we were doing the right things and she was good. But now I feel like we know, like, nope. You don't mess around with the gallons.
Well, like, she was the other girl for so long. Like, yeah, Roundup, right. Roundup was the it girl.
Sure.
And Liberty kind of spent the time waiting in the wings.
Roundup let herself go.
True. And then Roundup, yeah, gained 10 pounds and lost her crown. And now Liberty is coming out of the wings and like, hey, remember me?
Hey, I was around there too.
When you used to couldn't find me anywhere?
Oh, it's the Taylor Swift of herbicides.
Yes.
And she's got a lot of anger issues, but she's having her moment.
Because she rebranded all of her songs.
Yep, she rebranded.
Yep.
It's
yep.
Fair. Bing. It's... ding. Wow. That was a whole tangent I did not expect.
Yeah, we did not see that coming. Not even mad, I'm just impressed.
I'm struggling how to go to this next one. So
just push through.
All right. So just new one from FMC. Called Rimisoxafen. Rimisoxafen. Thank you, Bill, for the assist on that one. Dual action molecule. So it's got a group 12 and a group 32. So this one is a pre in corn and soybeans, and it's targeting Palmer and water hemp again. So
almost like those are problem issues.
Right.
Problem weeds.
Yeah.
Now here's the part with this one. It will be possibly marketed later this decade. So
we don't have much left.
Yeah, this one really isn't sort of, yeah.
We're halfway through.
True. Home, so at least we're not early decade. We're late decade, but this one will be kind of coming on. So not much, just something to be kind of watching. And it's kind of neat that we've got a dual mode of action molecule. So then here's another one that I think John Madden could assist us on.
Yeah.
Is Sonic Boom 3.35SC.
You want Madden or you want Boomer?
Boom. Boom. Yeah. So this one's going to put the...
whoop.
Know, takes the old Sonic.
Whoop.
And then what do we do with it?
We make it boom.
We make it boom. So it's adding Metribuzin with the Sulfentrazone. And again, not a new... neither of these are new. Metribuzin's been around a while, but it's nice because it combines these two into one product. So same as the old Sonic, just adding the Metribuzin in it. And this one, probably the only watchouts would be the normal things we're used to watching out with Metribuzin is high pHs on this one are possible watchout, or just read the label on that. But should be a really, really nice product. Maybe throw a dual with it on a pre for soybeans to catch some grass control and then a little bit of water hemp control as well, or some sort of other group 15 in with it early, and could be a really nice product that way.
It's easy to remember too.
Yeah, this one
easy to remember that.
Yeah,
yeah, going to be a pre-emerge on this one. So,
if you want to hear the boom coming, you got to do it before the beans are out of the ground.
That'd be advised.
So next one we got is either certain or certain. I've heard it certain more often.
I like that better.
I am certain you are correct.
And at 1.62 ZC. So this one is Sharpen plus Zidua minus the Pursuit. But so this one
we took the Sharpen from Zidua.
Right.
We took it out with the earlier Zidua plus.
Right.
And now
this one
we're taking Pursuit out.
Right.
And calling it certain.
I kind of like this a little bit better because I always get confused with the Authority brands, the 31st, 30.
Oh, sure. Like what's all?
What's what? You know, what is in all those? So I kind of like that they changed its name.
Well, this one's from BSF, so it's a
right.
You know, it's a different. Well, no, Zidua Plus is BSF. So yeah, you're right.
Right,
they
like
didn't
not
go
Zidua Extreme.
Right. It is odd that they would have went a different name with it. So this one, I guess, though, too, it's not really, to me, that's why. This is more on label for corn. So it's pre through early post or V3 in field corn with compatible liquid fertilizer carrier. So maybe that was part of it, too. They didn't want to mix us up that this is a soybean
sure.
product. And it is a solid encapsulation. Then that's why it has that ZC kind of name on it. And it does not have burn down activity on weeds, so you'll need to sort of add that. But I would think the sharp
it was sharpened in there.
Right. I'm
also confused by it saying if applying after emergence because you can't apply sharp.
Right.
After
so
unless the rate of sharpen is so low, but even still, I don't know.
I'm confused.
I got the pamphlet behind you, and that'd be a good one to double check, because the some of that isn't quite adding up. But basically, mix it with Liberty. You're gonna have some crop energy injury, so that one. This one too is also in the currently registered and being marketed. So it's around. It's not. I haven't seen it much in our area yet.
Not either.
So this is one maybe to watch and
haven't really thought about it yet.
You can fit it in and what you can sort of do with it. But anything to add that you see flipping through the pages, Matt?
I'm trying to find the. I'm just seeing.
It's got a lot of pictures of how well it
right,
works
the test.
And what it does and.
It says. New residual herbicide using Zidua SC and Kixor herbicide.
Kixor, that makes sense.
Formulated as the first ever solid encapsulated herbicide.
Makes a lot of sense. Because wherever I got that data from was definitely incorrect, and that makes more sense. So
yeah, pre-plant to V3 corn.
Encapsulation probably is a big deal.
Yep. Compatible with UAN, NATS, and custom tank mixes.
Ooh.
But if you add Liberty, you could see some injury.
So yeah, Kixor and Zidua. That could be a. So yeah, I would worry about the injury part, but if used right, that one could work well on certain things. And this one is currently registered. So here's another one where a few of these kind of got are intermingled of, you know, later be released or ready now. So last one we're gonna talk about today is Vorexor 3.13 SC.
So this one.
This one I'm going to double check too, because I've got, from what I found, it was Sharpen plus Tyrexor, but I'm going to double check all that that's correct, so we're not spouting out things that we'll need to say are different. But
you don't want to issue a retraction?
No, I don't. The. Yeah, so a combination of Cefluenacil, which is sharpened.
Cefluenacil, yep. And triflutamoxazin.
And remember the way they market it is sharpened, powered by Kixor. It's kind of how they market. Market that as well.
So, yeah, here, another one that's kind of waiting federal registration, but anticipated launch in 2026 with some volume, limited volume. So it will be burned down corn, soybeans, small grains. So a lot of this category seem burned down heavy. So which we still need that, and that's good. And if they work well for burn down, that's helpful. But yeah, I thought that was interesting when you really look at this group of new sort of active ingredients and premixes. It's more on the burn down heavy side. So any other ones you guys think of, or any that you guys think are going to be some you're going to try in 2026? I think Liberty Ultra, obviously, like we said, is kind of one that sort of started, and we'll be using it. Zidua Plus, I guess that one's still kind of waiting, so I don't know where that one will really end up. But a few of these, it's like if they're available, I'd like to definitely try some. Some Sonic Boom definitely will be out there and being tried. So
not new this year, but I'm going to try Kyber Pro this year.
That's
for some of those harder water hemp fields that we struggle with. So going to try to get that one in the rotation this year. I think, you know, we talked about it in the past, but this year we'll get that in the repertoire. And they said that Corteva will not have Ever-Pre-X next year. That's their like dual.
After 2026?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, because that's been a helpful one to get, like, say, a True Choice program or to do something with having that dual, that they still have that dual available.
Yeah, I mean, depending on the season, like the Zidua Plus might be a good option if you were going to spray early but can't. So now you're going to get in there later. It gives you different options with some still good chemistry there. So, I mean, we can always plan our herbicide program, but what we plan and what actually happens isn't always necessarily the same thing. So we hope the plan goes to plan. You just never know.
Just never know.
All right. So there's some things to think about and look forward to potentially for 2026. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So tractor sales are down nearly 20% as combine sales are looking an even bigger drop. So according to the most recent report from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, U.S. sales of agricultural tractors declined 19.6% in November of 2025 as compared to November 2024. They also found that combine sales decreased 35.2% during the same time. This decrease follows a similar trend from October 2025, where reports also showed a 19.6% year-over-year decrease in overall tractor sales. Conversely, Canadian combine sales increased 25.6% in November compared to the previous year, while sales of tractors dropped only 6.9% since November of last year. So total farm tractor sales for November were around 8,909, showing that decrease from 11,080 sold last year. Year-to-date, there are 180,825 total farm tractors that have been sold in 2025, which is a nearly 10% drop, 9.7%, from the 200,178 sold as of November last year. So total farm tractor inventory began at around 88,874 in November. So imagine that. Prices aren't great. People aren't buying tractors.
Not shocking.
No. And we saw that kind of start last year already with layoffs and other things happening in the tractor industry. So it was probably maybe more than it could be more than they expected, but they were expecting a drop. So it seems to be on par with that. All right, now we'll go into our Ag History Minute. So on this day in 1732, Benjamin Franklin, founding father of the United States, first published the Poor Richard's Almanac. The book, filled with weather forecast, planting advice based on lunar cycles, and proverbs encouraging hard work and self-sufficiency, all while blending practical tips with witty sayings and moral guidance. It was published continuously for 25 years and became one of the most popular publications in colonial America, selling an average of 10,000 copies a year. Poor Richard's provided crucial weather predictions before modern meteorology and guidance on the best times for planting and harvesting, often linked to the phases of the moon and other astronomical events. Almanac included tips on crop rotation, preserving food, managing livestock, which were essential for colonial life. Famous maxims like plow deep while sluggards sleep, and you shall have corn to sell and to keep, are linked to the diligence directly in agricultural successes. So that one is make hay while the sun shines flows a lot better in our modern version of English than plow deep while sluggards sleep, and you shall have corn to sell and to keep. It's a nice little rhyme there.
All right, thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's very easy. We've made it even easier for you because we're now on Spotify. So just search Tilt Talk Radio on your iPhone or your Android phone, and there you'll find us. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast. You can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilt Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll move into our Cool Beans That's Corny with some current events. So Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week, Americans drank more milk in 2024, which was reversing a decade-long decline in milk consumption. For more than a decade, Americans have been steadily drinking less milk each year, but the latest federal data shows milk beverages turned around in 2024, increasing by 358 million pounds, or just under 1 percentage point from the previous year, to 43.2 billion pounds. It's a result of the resurgence in sales of whole milk, which have been trending upward since 2014. The category saw a 3% increase from 2023 and helped offset the continued declines of most other categories, including reduced fat and skim milk. Leonard Polzin, a dairy markets and policy outreach specialist for the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Extension, said whole milk has benefited from the diet craze around protein, driven in large part by health and fitness influencers online. The more protein, the better. The consumers are all about that, he said. The other portion is kind of a shift towards healthy fats as well. So, for example, cottage cheese is having a real moment right now. So go get your cottage cheese on. Industry data shows that milk consumption is up in both households with children and those without. And that is according to Karen Geffert, Chief Policy Officer for the Green Bay-based Edge Dairy Farmers Cooperative. Geffert said the whole milk has also benefited from increasing consumer interest in whole foods and foods that are minimally processed. So the trend has been boosted by the Trump administration's Make America Healthy Again agenda. So as we move forward, hopefully we'll continue to see that trend, but you never know.
When was the last time you drank whole milk?
This morning.
Good. So you're a big whole milk guy, man.
Yep. Yeah. I put it in my smoothies in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Nice. With cottage cheese.
Yep. It's actually just cheese, cottage cheese. I'll just shred some mozzarella in there.
Sour cream.
Yeah, a little sour cream, some yogurt. There is actually yogurt in it. Yogurt and whole milk, along with some fruit. So,
Bill, are you a whole milk guy?
No.
Skim?
Yeah, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
Might as well just drink water.
Yeah.
It's It's fine.
It's cloudy water is what it is.
It's fine. It's not cloudy water.
I used to drink more, 2%, but then when my kids started drinking whole milk, then it was like, I'm not going to buy two different kinds of milk. We'll just all drink the same thing.
I'm helping the dairy farmer by diversifying their...
So their butter fat
can go other places. Their fat can go elsewhere to produce other products, which probably doesn't help the dairy farmer. It helps the milk plant.
Plants,
Sorry, dairy farmers.
All right. Sorry, did you have something you wanted to add there?
I just remember drinking the raw milk when you were kids, Bill, and then like it's still somehow different. I think part of it is like Dad would skim the top of the bulk tank some of the times. Sometimes he'd get it out the bottom.
Usually it was out the bottom.
Yeah.
Say most of the time because we'd get it from my uncle down the road,
yeah,
it would come out of the bottom.
Because he had to
turn, he'd open the thing and
you open the end and
you had to pull it just right so it just had like shoot all over.
Looked like a giant pickle jar that we would fill with.
Pickle jar.
I don't remember if that's what it was or not, but it was a bit. It's that glass kind of jar. Still?
Yeah. Yep. Because we always had like a tin,
metal. Little can.
Milk can.
Yeah, but he had that little screw nozzle that he put on the end of the valve that the milkman would have to take off to get
the other valve on.
You're right, Todd, if you let, like...
Oh, I remember.
Open the valve and let it just be like this.
I mean, just all the
pressure.
Yeah.
All right. Our That's Corny this week. Highly pathogenic avian influenza was detected in Wisconsin in a Dodge County dairy herd. So the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, or DETCAP, has identified a case of highly pathogenic avian influenza in a dairy herd in Dodge County. That's the first detection of HPAI in dairy cattle in Wisconsin. Samples were tested by the Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostics Laboratory and confirmed by the National Veterinary Services Laboratories. DADCAP is working to respond in coordination with the USDA, FDA, and CDC, along with state partners. The affected farm has been quarantined, and any cattle exhibiting signs of illness will be separated for further treatment. Per the USDA, there is no concern about the safety of the commercial milk supply or consumer health as products are pasteurized prior to entering the market. The CDC considers the human health risk for this virus to be low. DATCAP is encouraging cattle and poultry owners to register their premises. State law requires that all livestock owners register where their animals are kept, and registration helps animal health officials communicate with owners during disease outbreaks. Future updates will be sent to emails associated with livestock or poultry registered premises. So hopefully that's, they found it, quarantined it. Hopefully they can get the herd healthy again, and we won't have to continue hearing about it. But it's been around, so it was only... I guess a matter of time before we found it here in the state. So now we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. And once again, David Hula has taken the top in the corn yield contest.
Damn, he just keeps winning.
So he's the Tom Brady of corn yield.
Of corn.
Hula has a 572.2589 bushel per acre winning entry in this year's National Corn Growers Association Corn Yield Contest. So his winning streak is continuing. The Charles City, Virginia farmer produced that bushel per acre to top this year's contest. It's the 14th national high yield win in the contest for Hula. He said it came with some important production insights. If I could point to any one thing about the 2025 season, it's that it handed us a lesson on the importance of finishing strong. His winning entry in the irrigated strip-till category came with Pioneer P18216PWE, a 118-day hybrid. Sponsored annually by the National Corn Growers Association for the past 61 years, the 2025 contest produced first-place national winners in 9 production categories from 6 different states. Contest also features a special nitrogen management category. Overall, the National Corn Growers announced the yield contest saw nearly 7,800 entries from farmers in 47 states. The combined categories had verified yields averaging 269 bushels per acre. So Hula's entry was the only one to exceed 500 bushels per acre this year. He is the only farmer to exceed 600 bushels per acre in the national contest and has done it three times in 2019, 2021, and 2023. So we'll congratulate him on his win once again. But remember, it is a small plot. It'd be, you know, if he was seeing a farm average like that, that'd be really something. But, you know, these are highly managed, small areas. You guys have, I've never had the opportunity to work with one, but you two have both had some experience with it. So
these are, they're, you do learn a lot from trying to do this and what can work and what things are, but it is hard sometimes because you're throwing multiple things at it, so it's not necessarily...
And you're picking the right fields, right? You're picking your best fields, drainage and fertility and just everything. And
Yeah,
and then again, this was irrigated corn as well. I don't know, Todd, you would be probably the only one of us that would have had the opportunity to do an irrigated plot.
Never done an irrigated
plot. Yeah.
No,
most of them, yeah, around here are all dry land, so...
Yeah, but it's neat, you know, the state results are out, so you kind of see what people around you got and see certain variety. What I do think is interesting, there's very, Jeff Plinsky always used to ask this question to the seed guys, and it's kind of a good way to, but he said, what variety would win a corn grower's plot?
Yep.
And I think we've carried
we still ask that question.
That because it sort of tells you, you know, what your most offensive, you know, full throttle sort of corn can do. And it is neat to see what some of these can. And it's amazing. I mean, that he hit that many bushels this year, but that he's hit 600. I mean, that's just.
That's double. That's, like, right, our best, like when we, Todd and I do these plots, we're just squeaking 300 and we're like overjoyed.
Right.
And this guy's double that.
He's doubling it, yeah.
I mean,
it's a different, he's a different weight class or scale than we are, but agreed to even picture that, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it looks like the conventional non-irrigated for Wisconsin was DeForest, was the winner at 347.
A lot of the Wisconsin winners were
south.
Like south.
And if you look at, there's a spot you can look at all the entries for every state. And the farms that we work with are in there, and all their competition is south. So we're kind of punching up a weight class, too, with what we're doing here.
Right. Like, sometimes I do wish they would put a, like, we'd compete with, say, northern Minnesota, North Dakota, or something. You know, there'd be a line based on growing degree units, not state lines. Because I think they're, it's, especially with corn, that would make total sense to go by sort of what our normal GDUs are in areas, but it's still a cool thing, and most guys know that. I mean, that you're, you know, to hit 300 bushel in our areas, that's really cool. So
yeah, it looks like plover and almond is kind of the furthest north on this state list of winners.
Yeah, and those would be the irrigated ones.
And that'd be, yeah, well, some of them are, I thought I saw one that was non-irrigated, but no, I guess they are all irrigated, yeah, and the non-irrigated are Wanakee, DeForest, Dane County, Waterloo.
Which shows they had a good year this year in that area. Yep. You know, it wasn't, some of that's closer to the state line, but enough that's a little off the state line.
All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about some herbicide combinations that you might be seeing out in the market this year. In our spotlight, we took a look at declining tractor sales, Ag History Minute, talked about the Poor Richard's Almanac. Cool beans this week is milk on the rise as far as consumption goes. That's Corny was a Dodge County dairy herd with bird flu in the cattle. Our Field Good Friday was Dave Hula once again winning the National Corn Growers Association contest with his 572.2589 bushels per acre. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.